It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 277. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap the Phil series win over the Miami Marlins. It was not a pretty series. The Phillies almost came out on the losing end of this one, but after a long marathon on Sunday afternoon, the Phillies do take two out of three from the worst team in the division. We're going to talk about the bullpen, the starting rotation. We'll talk about the up-and-down nature of the offense and a good weekend for Gabe Kapler. And we're going to chat a little bit about some of the differences we're seeing in Kapler here so far in 2019. Joining me to do that, as he does every week, is the head guy over at The Good Fight, Justin Clue. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, I apologize for taking you away from your very favorite show in the world. Game of Thrones is doing their season premiere as we're discussing the Phillies here, buddy. So that's my bad. That's poor planning on my part, bud.
You know, I feel like I'm the only person, and I feel like I feel like I'm the only person whose opinion about Game of Thrones you might not know at this point, because I wasn't announcing whether or not I was going to watch it tonight, and I was thinking about it this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, it was on my mind, but when the time came, I just realized, oh shoot, it's 9:20 and I'm just doing something else.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like I've got a pretty healthy mindset about it. I just want to talk about real quick. This series in Miami has allowed us to get a really up close look at the Marlins' new uniforms this season.
And
I feel like they have such an opportunity in Miami to have just the most fun, the coolest, most wild, colorful uniforms, and that's the kind of uniform I'm all about. So if you've got like this vibrant city in a climate that's just like a different place to play than so many other places, like in the NL East, you're playing in a lot of like cities that are pretty close to the same. In the National League, you know, there's just city to city in this part of the country. Yeah, they all have kind of different personalities, but like climate-wise, personality-wise, like how many cities do you hear described as like, oh, it's old and blue-collar and tough and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, Miami's just got this very tropical, modern, fun feel. And I don't know, I feel like they blew it. I feel like the last ones were more festive and fun than these. And like, I'm watching clips from today's game, and Brian Anderson, who I want to come back to in a second here, hit that home run to tie the game at 1-1. And when he hits the home run, you just watch in the background as the ball sails over the fence. There is a man in what I think is a big, colorful, covered in like floral button-down shirt who is like flailing his arms and running so passionately to try and catch this baseball, and then he disappears behind a wall, and I'm just like, that guy's wearing the uniform I want the Marlins to be wearing.
I see him right now. I'm watching it right now because I wanted to see what you were talking about, and you're right, he's got a full-on floral shirt on. Mm-hmm. As he's running after
that should
it.
Be, yeah, I mean, even just for awesome. Sunday home game alternate, maybe just absolutely mm-hmm. go nuts. But no, of course Derek Jeter was like, we're gonna go simple, we're gonna go plain, we're gonna be the team that's like the uniform equivalent of forcing people to shave their facial hair. It's just so not Miami as you know, me, someone who's has, you know, no real history or experience with the city of Miami, but just, you know, that's the vibe I get from it. And yeah, P.S. Brian Anderson, I had the feeling that he kills the Phillies, because I feel like every time I look up that they're playing the Marlins, Brian Anderson is doing something to hurt the Phillies. He is a career .292 hitter against the Phillies, which is
his
best batting average against a single team that he's faced at least 20 times, which isn't a lot. There's like, I don't know, probably like 5-6 teams that he's faced at this point that many times, and you know, largely NL East teams given that he's on the Marlins. Yeah. But still, and he's also just a good player.
He is a good player,
but at the same time, yeah, he's I think he's got everything, all the signs are there that he's going to be a Philly killer, and boy, I just, it sucks it sucks facing one of those guys.
Yeah, every team in the division has one of those guys. Like, I think Juan Soto is turning into one of those guys for the Nationals, along with Victor Robles, who had some big hits in the series last week.
Well, Anthony Rendon, but he's just a baseball killer.
Yeah,
I think.
Rendon does to everybody. That's right. Well, like Jay Bruce used to do it with the Mets when the Mets would come in, and I think he was replaced by McNeil last year, who seemed to get a big hit after big hit. Jeff McNeil, a big hit after big hit for the Mets last year. And yeah, you're right. There's always And that goes back. I remember going back years and years and years. There, you know, there's always Philly killers. You hear them from every generation. There's always these guys, and a lot of times they're kind of random guys. They're like the first guy off the bench who always seems to get two or three spot starts against the Phillies during a season and gets four hits in a couple different games. You know, it's always somebody like that. But returning to your uniform talk, I agree with you on the white uniforms. I thought the black ones looked a little better. I kind of like the black with the paisley blue that they've got going on with a little bit of pink sprinkled in, but they certainly could have done more. They seem to be accentuating the black with the color as just slight, just very, very slight, a very slight emphasis on the blue and the pink. I mean, Miami's Art Deco. Lean into that. You know what I mean? I realize you don't want to have, you probably don't, although you could though, you probably don't want to have pink uniforms, but you could have pink uniforms. Why is that? Why would that be an issue? I mean, it doesn't just have to happen during Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
I do agree that putting pink in there is a great move, because when you think about who owns like each color, there's way too many red teams. There's way too many blue teams. I love the Rockies. I love the Diamondbacks. I love that they're wearing these colors that are A, not everywhere and pretty singular for the sport that they play, and B, reflective of like the region they play in somehow. Like that's just good marketing research, that like purple you associate to mountains, and then like the burnt reds and oranges that the Diamondbacks play with are like Southwestern. Like that's great. That's very cool. That's what it's supposed to be. And in a perfect world, all the Philly teams would be blue and yellow, because that's the colors on the Philadelphia flag. But like, that's just not the world we live in. So I think it's great to see pink in the logo. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm the guy who's just like, oh, color wise, let's just pedal to the metal here and go absolutely crazy. And then everyone would hate them and they'd have to get rid of them. I'd be the guy in the room who, I know the Phillies are doing a Saturday night special acknowledgement this season, which I think is amazing, where they're acknowledging the uniforms that went full burgundy up and down. They look like
burgundy pant, burgundy. Yeah, those were great.
Like
those
pajamas. Were great. They had to get rid of them after wearing them one time, because people were like, these suck and we lost a bad game while wearing them. I would have been the guy who like days earlier was like, let's just do full burgundy. Let's go crazy. And they'd be like, I don't know. And I'd be like, listen, if we don't do this, I'm going to sue everyone in this room. We have to do it.
You should check out. Did they lose the game? I mean, because they only did it one time.
They did, because we did a dirty inning on the game where they wore the Saturday night special uniforms. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We should mention that Liz Rocher will not be part of the podcast tonight. She's experiencing some travel woes.
Yeah, she's not just sitting like there waiting to be introduced 8 minutes
right.
into
the
podcast.
Oh, Liz is here too.
She is not
here. You know,
here.
Liz would have made her presence felt before now. But she has had a flight canceled on her. So she's coming back from a trip on the road in a car and all that nonsense. You know, one of those nightmare travel scenarios that you hear about. So Liz will be with the show in spirit, and we'll be talking to her next week. In the meantime, it'll just be Justin and I taking you through this series against the Marlins. And, you know, some interesting stuff went down in this series against Miami, Justin. This is not a good baseball team the Phillies were playing, but for much of the series, the Phillies tried to make it look like this team was an equal to them. I mean, this was a pretty nip and tuck series. The Phillies won the first game pretty easily on Friday. The Marlins blew their doors off on Saturday, and then the Phillies win a 14 inning affair on Sunday, 3-1. Some good things did come out of this series, and I think the first thing to talk about is the bullpen. I mean, I know early in the season, the bullpen was a concern. David Robertson was not pitching well. Sir Anthony Dominguez was not pitching well. Hector Neris had been pitching well, but was kind of he's not available to pitch every single day. You had some guys like Pat Nashak who were not able to go a couple of times here and there, and we had a game where Edubre Ramos had to close things out and blew the game. It's at the end of the day, the Phillies here on Sunday watched their bullpen turn in a tremendous effort, and they did a good job on Friday as well, specifically Victor Arano. who was nightmarish in the spring, Justin. He got two innings of work in on Sunday, faced six batters, and struck out all six hitters, the first time since Josh Hader did it last September. And before that, no pitcher had done it since 2013, faced at least six hitters and struck them out. It only had occurred 10 times total since 2013. That's according to the write-up that Paul Boyer did for us for The Good Fight. So really an amazing performance by Arano, Justin, and the bullpen as a whole on Sunday. A real 180 from the series against the Nationals when it looked like the whole pen was falling apart.
I just want to say that according to MLB.com, Victor Arano's nickname is Elway. And according to the potentially compromised Spanish dictionary I used to look up the meaning of that phrase, it either means the dude or the idiot. And I guess I feel like that's so I'm not going to say I'm calling Victor Arano an idiot. I'm more just saying that there's clearly a positive and a negative version of that nickname that he apparently has. And boy, have we seen both versions of him this year alone, just in spring training and then again today. Yeah. You know, I've been trying to I'm going to probably have something up on The Good Fight tomorrow to this effect, that the Phillies really used this series. Yeah, I mean, they won two out of three games, and the bullpen really came through in this game today. The offense really came through in the first game. Jake Arrieta looked pretty good. Game two was the one pitcher who has shown the most promise in the rotation. Zach Eflin got shellacked in game two, and that was, you know, really disappointing. They had to go with a position player pitching for the first time this year. It was just a lot of examples of how the Phillies have struggled to fire on more than one cylinder. It seemed like when one thing is working, the other things might not be working as well. In game one, yeah, obviously having Jake Arrieta, you know, having him face the Marlins, he had been sort of been orbiting a good start in his first two starts. Like, things weren't great. He had six walks in his first game. The walks kind of went down in his second game. And then this being his third game, he kept the Phillies in it in I think both cases, even though his command wasn't there. The offense should have bailed him out in the second game that I think they lost 6-2. But in this game, everything clicked. So the offense was there, the starting pitching was there, and they didn't have to worry as much about the bullpen. In game two, obviously they didn't have as much of their strengths working. The offense disappeared. What, they have like three hits in that game? Like, it was just...
And only one hit through like the first seven. Yeah. It was pathetic.
And then today, you know, they did win the game, and that's what you expect the Phillies to do against the Marlins this year. But it really, you know, it took 14 innings for the offense to score more than one run against a team that now 4-12. And fortunately, they could rely on their bullpen, which is something they haven't been able to do all season long. So that was really encouraging to see four, five, six innings of bullpen work from guys like David Robertson.
Well, it's more than that. It was more than that. It was eight innings of bullpen work because Velasquez went six innings. The bullpen went eight scoreless, struck out 14 batters, and walked two in this one. So, I mean, that's a hell of a performance. Patton Nashak pitched an inning. Adam Morgan and Hector Neris combined to pitch an inning. Dave Robertson pitched two scoreless innings. Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched a scoreless inning. And Arano got the two innings of scoreless work in there. He picked up the win. And Jose Alvarez picked up a shutout inning in relief. And I know Miami's offense isn't that great, but after the way they hit on Saturday, I wasn't finding Miami's offense to be a punching bag, you know, or a punch line anymore, the way they handled Philly's pitching on Saturday. So, you know, I think it was really encouraging. You know, these guys we were worried about, especially Dave Robertson, after that opening series, opening couple of series where he blew that lead against the Nationals, hitting, you know, allowing a single and walking the next three guys to allow the winning run to score. I mean, that was worrsome. Watching Dave Robertson start the season like that, and he's bounced back.
And him especially.
Yeah.
Him especially, who is being acquired to prevent situations like that from happening, from thinking, oh, we've seen, how many times have we seen Hector Neris or someone like not, you know, blow that situation, and not just by like, oh, he didn't miss bats. Oh, his slider didn't slide. Oh, a guy got on base and some fluke. Like, no, it's been a lot of like hands-on lets, you know, like throwing 35 pitches to allow the bases to be loaded and then bringing in another pitcher. Like a lot of like the Phillies bullpen inviting situations like that to happen. But instead of Hector Neris, it was David Robertson, the guy who was supposed to prevent that from happening, being the culprit of it. And you know, yeah, it's early, but at the same time, you are anxious when the season starts to see evidence that the people the Phillies have acquired to prevent the situations we don't want to see from last year, even just like a couple of times, show that they are capable of that, even if, you know, they're still in the showing the frayed nerves of early season struggles, even if they still are sort of not mentally, but physically in spring training, where like maybe they just didn't get to throw enough and they're still working some stuff out. But just seeing the kind of issues the Phillies have had, where it was, we saw some real, it was too early in the season to have a dirty inning episode happen. And we saw that happen this weekend.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
And a lot of that it's because, not just this weekend, but in, you know, since the season has started, there's been a lot of, really proactively bad bullpen stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is good. It's great to have a game like this where, you know, I say it all the time, the bullpen's the most volatile part of the team. You're going to see the most fluctuating there until these guys really get in a groove. And like we've talked about, maybe some guys actually know what their job is. I feel like that might be something that's missing from this bullpen. But
yeah,
until then, we had today. We had almost a full game of bullpen performances where they managed to hold a one-run lead on the road.
Yeah.
Like that is no easy task. We, you know, it's very easy to watch the Phillies or any team lose on the road in a situation like that. Like that the struggle, the challenge is on them. Like they have to do more to win that game. And the bullpen really set them up to do that. And David Robertson was a part of that. Obviously, Victor Arano put up a historic performance like this. It was good to see. But at this point in the season, yeah, you're just kind of like everything isn't just a success. It's a success you have to build upon to really know what the situation is. So right now, I think it's a healthier outlook to just be looking at these games singularly rather than be looking for any kind of forecast. I know we're kind of we're still searching for like, okay, what I know, we know this team is good. We think we know what their strengths are. We think we know what their weaknesses are. Let's brand this team. And I feel like you said something earlier this weekend that was like, well, this team seems like it's really all or nothing. And it's just like, let's just focus on one game at a time for the moment. And then like at the end of April, we'll have a better idea of who the Phillies are in 2019. But for now it's like, yeah, let's just make sure everybody's calibrated and on the same page. And today we saw the bullpen do that for what felt like probably the first time all season, really step up and put together all, you know, like I said, almost nine innings of shutout baseball when they really had to. And this was an important win for the Phillies to take this series. If they lost this series and again, early, and they would have been what, like 8-6, that's too close to 500 than you should be leaving Miami if you're this Phillies team. So yeah, that was a big win for them today, and the bullpen's what keyed it.
Yeah, Sir Anthony Dominguez also was nice to see him bounce back. He struck out three out of the four batters he faced, gave up a walk in his inning of work, and we were worried about him also. So good outing by Sir Anthony
Dominguez.
And
anybody who is like not who we were worried about isn't fixed because of today.
Right, right.
It's just like, all right, great. Today is over, and the score was 3-1, and that was largely because of the bullpen.
Yep. Yeah, the Phillies would have been 8-6, but instead they moved to 9-5. And Jim Salisbury wrote leading into the game that he thought that the Phillies had reached their first mini gut check game of the season because this is the Marlins. These are the series that the Phillies need to win. Last year, they only went 11-8 against the Marlins, a terrible baseball team. And those are the teams you got to beat. Last year, the Atlanta Braves won the National League East because they beat up on teams that were worse than them, like the Marlins and the Phillies. And that's what the Phillies need to do. They need to take advantage of these 18 games against Miami. They can't lose series to this team. And that would have been, especially coming off that series at home against the Nationals, where they lost their first series of the season. It would have been really disheartening to lose a series to Miami, but they managed to pull it out and move to 9-5, tied with the Mets atop the National League East. And the Phillies now still have the second best record in the National League. Of course, you know, you win one game here, lose one game here, you go from the second best record in the league to the fifth best record or the seventh best record just because of how few games have been played so far. One last thing about the bullpen, Justin. Ken Rosenthal reported on Saturday that Craig Kimbrell continues to seek a deal that he believes to be fair and in the range of two recent free agent relievers, Wade Davis and his three-year $52 million deal, and Zach Britton's three-year $39 million deal. So I guess the question that I have is, if you can get Craig Kimbrell for 3 years and let's just say $45 million, which is $15 million a season, are you doing that, or do you want to hold on to that money if the goal is to stay under the luxury tax? And you and I can debate about whether or not the Phillies should worry about the luxury tax, being that they are a multi-billion dollar company. But the fact is they probably are going to try and stay under the luxury tax. So working under that assumption, given that if that's what they're going to do, do you think 3 years, $45 million for Kimbrell right now would be a smart move? Or as we're about ready to start talking about the starting rotation, do you want to maybe just kind of leave yourself a little bit more financial flexibility and hold off right now and see if maybe you need to invest that money in the starting pitching market?
Yeah, if I'm you and me, then obviously I couldn't care less about the luxury tax and the Phillies having to pay for
Correct.
It. So I
Correct.
Think a 3 year, $45 million deal for Kimbrell is perfectly reasonable. And if I think it's going to improve the bullpen, then yeah, you go out and get him because you're made of money. And do that, because if there's anything that we're calling a weakness at this point, it's probably the bullpen, and Craig Kimbrell is somebody who's supposed to be able to help that. If I'm the Phillies, though, yeah, and I'm trying to stay under that, I'm probably using this day, not this weekend, as evidence that, hey, you know, we don't know yet who is like what this bullpen's going to be. There's a reason we don't have Craig Kimbrell on this team now. And that's because we signed David Robertson and we've got a lot of faith in guys like Victor Arano and Sir Anthony Dominguez. And we think we have a good bullpen already. And yeah, also we're trying to stay under the luxury tax. But also, you know, this is a bullpen that is capable of doing what it did today. Again, I think that's true, even as the real me, not the me who is the embodiment of the Phillies. So I think, yeah, it's probably more to their advantage to be spending that money on, to be saving that money for starting pitching moving forward, because that is, you know, that's also an area where this team is a little worrisome. Like I said, this weekend we saw Zach Eflin get crushed for the first time, and we saw Jake Arrieta. I don't know why I changed the emphasis of his name there, but we saw Jake Arrieta put in his first good starts of the season. And Aaron Nola has been a concern all year long. He hasn't had a really good, you know, Aaron Nola start yet this year. So there isn't really somebody I consider a stopper in the Philly starting rotation. And we're about three starts through for just about everybody. I know Velasquez didn't get his first start till later in the season, so he's, I think, only made his second start mm-hmm. today, which was also encouraging from a Velasquez standpoint. But in any case, yeah, that's not a complete situation yet, that rotation. And with the bullpen being like, look, we can do this. Also, David Robertson is David Robertson. Also, the promising arms they've had in there that are still there are capable of what they're capable of. And I don't think that's as troubling as any starting rotation issues, which definitely exist. And they've also proven that this offense can't bail out its pitching all of the time. And if you can make your team better in every aspect, then why not do that? So, yeah, I think moving forward, starting pitching should definitely be more of a concern for this team than the bullpen, just because when there's no stopper, that's when I get really nervous. When you can't just make a full orbit of the rotation and feel like, all right, but, you know, once we loop back around to so-and-so, we'll be able to stabilize, we'll be able to stop the bleeding. And it just doesn't feel like we have someone in that position right now. And that is a very unwelcome and tragically familiar feeling.
Yeah, well, you hope that's Aaron Nola. You hope that he's going to bounce back after his first three
sure.
rough starts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't mean to make it sound like I think Aaron, stick a fork in Aaron Nola, he's done.
What a loser, no, no. Yeah.
I am certainly expecting to see Aaron Nola be Aaron Nola moving forward. I'm just saying, fortifying that starting rotation should certainly be a priority moving forward.
And early,
because I don't think...
Yeah, no,
go ahead.
I was going to say, earlier this week, John Morosi said on MLB Network that the Phillies were doing their due diligence on Madison Bumgarner already, and that surprised me. I mean, I realize teams want to kind of keep track of what's going on around the league, but maybe he's overstating what the Phillies are actually doing here. But you can understand that they would just kind of be checking in to see if Bumgarner is looking okay. And just so for people who haven't been watching Bumgarner closely this year, he's made 4 starts. He's gone 26 innings. He's a 3.12 ERA, a 4.57 FIP. He's got a strikeout rate of 22.8%, which is up a little bit from last year. His velocity is about the same. It is too early to really think about adding people to me, unless you're going to get like another bullpen arm that's not a Craig Kimbrell, and you're going to make a trade for somebody that you can use in the middle innings or something like that. They obviously want to keep an eye on these different things, but you know, we really just haven't seen enough of the Phillies starters this year. I mean, Jake Arrieta on Friday, that was the best he's looked since early last season. He did have an outing last year, and I'm trying to remember who it was against, but he struck out 12 guys in an outing, but it was such an outlier. It was really the only outing all season in which he struck out a number of players, had a lot of swings and misses like he did on Friday against the Marlins. 8 strikeouts in 7 innings of work, gave up just 5 hits and 1 run with 1 walk. We were kind of talking before the season of all the different pitchers that you would hope would step up and give Nola a little bit of relief. You'd like to think it's your guy making $25 million a year in Jake Arrieta. And so far this season, he has a 2.25 ERA. It's very early. The sample size is small. He's had some issues with walks here and there. But I think one of the things that they were talking about was that Chris Young was trying to fix Arrieta's arm slot, to have him come a little bit more over the top like he was in his days in Chicago, when he was really effective, instead of the 3/4 slot where he's been over the last couple of years. Fixing something like that is easier said than done, but if they've been able to identify a mechanical flaw in Jake Arrieta or figure out a way to keep his ball from having less horizontal run so that he's not able to command it as well, that would be big. Obviously, getting Jake Arrieta to pitch like a number 2 starter, it would be just, given Nick Pivetta's struggles, would be an enormous boost. And it looked like maybe he's starting to get there. It's too early to tell, but it's a good sign.
Yeah, and he said that he was bumping up his changeup usage in his last start, and that's part of what made him so effective. But I think he threw like 20 changeups at one point, and he had a career high swing and miss number for a single game. I think it was like 8 swing and misses on his changeup, which, you know, that's, he changed something, which was, it's, you know, that's what you got to do. And I think, yeah, you know, Jake Arrieta, what's something I've noticed about Jake Arrieta, and this is probably painfully trivial, but at the same time, I have noticed it, that every time the Phillies get on base, we know they're doing the Fortnite wave thing from when they're on base. And every time they cut back to the dugout on the TV broadcast, the guy's waving back to them. Jake Arrieta is always there. He is always in the middle of them. And he's always waving back. And I don't think, and I don't want to assume, but I am, I don't think Jake Arrieta is that familiar with Fortnite. I don't think he necessarily gets the reference, but he's,
I don't know how, I wonder how old are his kids? I don't know how old his kids are. It's possible if his kids are old enough that he's seen it from them. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. At the same time, he's never as old as I think he is. He's 33. He's 1 year older than me. So he always seems older to me. At the same time, yeah, I'm just saying that I think he's there, you know, he's present. He's not like off grumbling about something. We got the vibe that maybe he was a bit of a malcontent last year at certain times. But no, he's there. He's enthusiastic. He's taken part in like the little, I like to think about like the meeting they had where they're like, all right, we're going to start doing like this ridiculous wave thing when we get on base. And like 33-year-old Jake Arrieta is like, whatever, man, I just want to make my pitches. But he's there and he's waving back. And today he made a change, to improve his own game and to make the kind of impact that we're talking about. You know, he's been having some command issues. We bumped up his changeups. It was really effective. Yeah, it was against one of the worst teams in the National League, but you still got to win those games, and it was encouraging to see. So that's what you want to see. Gabe Kapler is a guy who's defined himself by saying like, look, all right, I'm somebody who thinks this way, but I want my defining quality to be that I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to change and I'm willing to understand and be wrong and use it as a learning experience. And that's a really valuable trait as long as you're executing it genuinely. If you're just saying it, obviously it means nothing. But to see that in players as well is like, yeah, that's important, because you don't want a guy who's like, well, I'm a veteran and I've always done it this way and I'm never going to change because this works for me. But Jake Arrieta, you know, he said, like, baseball is humbling. I'm always going to be humbled by this game, and you got to learn to adapt and make changes based on the struggles you're currently facing. And whatever he was doing wrong that was leading to so many walks, him and maybe Chris Young, you know, maybe they worked out that, like, look, all right, we're gonna work on this changeup and we're gonna use it a little more, and hopefully it's gonna throw hitters off. And it did. It worked well enough against the Marlins that that's a new pitch, or not a new pitch, but a new approach that opposing hitters are gonna have to deal with when they face Jake Arrieta. So, you know, that the changeup itself is good to see more of, but at the same time, just that mindset of like, all right, that didn't work, let's try something else.
Up next, we're going to talk about a couple other starters in the Phillies rotation, the weekends that they had, Vince Velasquez, Zach Eflin, and just kind of go over some of the big decisions that Gabe Kapler made this weekend. Hey, as a manager, sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong, but Gabe Kapler had himself, I think, a very good week, even in defeat, even in losing his series to the Nationals last week and in this series this weekend. I thought Gabe Kapler has already shown he's a different manager here in 2019. We're going to get into all that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. Justin Clue and John Stolness taking you through this series against the Miami Marlins here this weekend. Phillies take 2 out of 3 and improve to 9-5 on the season, tied with the Mets atop the National League East. And we're talking about the starting rotation a little bit more. Obviously, we just finished talking about Jake Arrieta. He looked great in his outing on Friday. Let's talk about Zach Eflin, who struggled on Saturday in the Phillies' 10-3 loss to the Marlins. Zach Eflin had been the most valuable starter in the rotation so far this season, Justin, but I'm getting the sense from everybody in this rotation, and Zach Eflin is included, that with the exception of Aaron Nola, who I believe will bounce back, and he may not be as dominant as he was last year. Aaron Nola seems to have a problem with home runs this season. He's getting hit a lot with his curveball, which I think is not going to be something that continues this year. But aside from an Aaron Nola resurgence, which I think we all see coming, Zach Eflin had shown the most promise. And you know me, I've never been a big Zach Eflin guy. That's my mantra whenever we talk about Zach Eflin. And Saturday was one of the games why I don't see great stuff from him a lot. He has to command the stuff that he has. And on Saturday, he had no command. It looked like he was going to be dominant early in that game, but he left too many pitches over the middle of the plate, and Marlins hitters, one of the weakest offenses in baseball, lit him up to the tune of 10 hits in 4 innings. He gave up 10 hits in 4 innings, 3 home runs, 6 earned runs in all with 4 strikeouts. So not an encouraging start from Zach Eflin, but as I was going to say, I think this is kind of what we're going to see from this starting rotation this year, Justin. Up and down, 2 starts, 2 good starts, 2 bad starts. 2 good starts, 1 bad start. 1 good start, 2 bad starts. You know, it's hard to see which of these pitchers outside of Aaron Nola is going to put together a 2 or 3 month stretch where they are pitching well consistently. That's the way it was last year, and I don't see anything yet in this very early stage that's going to lead me to believe anything different so far.
Man, you talk about Aaron Nola's curveball getting hit when Brian Anderson, of course, he attacked a Zach Eflin first pitch curveball and sent it 435 feet when he key that inning where I think, what was it, there an inning that they had their first 3 home run innings since 2017.
It was a third inning. Nasty.
Brutal. And I mean if you look at it the broadest possible perspective, I just don't want to see pitching like that anymore. Like, I want to have, like, I just know. Said one guy who you can rely on, and it just makes you wonder what the Phillies are going to do to adjust. Like, either they're going to make a move where we were just saying they were doing their due diligence on Madison Bumgarner, where they try to improve from the outside. And if they do go to improve from the outside, this has to be the area they focus on. At the same time, do they really think that their offense can bail them out of any pitcher can give up 5-6 runs and their offense will keep them in the game? I think that's not a crazy thought, but it seems like a hell of a gamble as far as a strategy goes. Like, yeah, the offense is very strong, but at the same time, they only scored 3 runs in that game, and that's part of why they lost so horrifically.
And they were all in garbage time in the 9th inning when they were down 10-0.
Right. I was going to say, you want to talk about impressive pitching performances this weekend? I got to give it to Aaron Altair hitting 90 miles an hour on the pitching gun when he came in garbage time. But yeah, I don't want to say disappointing, because no one should be disappointed yet. You know, it's a baseball season.
Yeah, really, by anything.
We're playing 5-6 games a week. Like, we'll forget about a loss by this time tomorrow. At the same time, yeah, it does. I think you're just getting an early indication of how this team is going to win games moving forward. And yeah, we all thought we'd have seen an Aaron Nola, more Aaron Nola-ish start by now, and we're going to see those starts moving forward. I think at this point we should be more encouraged by the fact that, yeah, I know you're desperate to point out the flaws in Zach Eflin, because you are his nemesis, not just in baseball but personal life. I know you're eager to see his downfall, but
very much.
But his first two starts were very promising. That game in Washington, Bryce Harper's return to D.C., where Zach Eflin made the start, and he pitched really well against a tough, really, you know, almost
a better offense.
A better offense, yes.
Yeah.
That was tremendous to see. And that got us all talking about, you know, that this isn't Nick Pivetta's year. Maybe it's Zach Eflin's. It's gonna be about adjustments. Like I was saying about Jake Arrieta, that goes for the younger guys too. I mean, these are guys who don't have reputations as much as a guy like Jake Arrieta or Aaron Nola. These are guys who have been forced to really think on their feet and really try to make it work for the past couple of years. It's why the back end of the rotation has been such a mystery, because it's been like this, where it's like, all right, Zach Eflin did throw 2 complete games when he was a rookie, but he also got like hammered in his first start in what was, I think, the worst Major League Baseball debut for a pitcher ever. So
I forgot about that. You're right.
At a certain point, you got to look down on this team from on high and think, all right, look, yeah, it's cool to stir the maybe he's turning it around narrative every time a guy puts a good start out there. But at the same time, there's something to be said for stabilization and just being able to know what you have in a pitcher. Like, if a guy is going to go out there and pitch to the tune of a 4.45 ERA, okay, that's not great, but at least you know what to expect. At least you know, all right, the offense is going to have to do the lion's share of the work today. We have this guy in our rotation because he's just there right now, and we haven't worked at improving that particular facet of the team. But, you know, we know what we can expect from him. If you have a guy who's going to go out there and pitch a complete game and then get absolutely hammered by one of the league's worst offenses, then it becomes, you know, a little more of a challenge. At this point, guys like Eflin, guys like Velasquez, they're not just looking to establish themselves this year. I think the team is eager to know who they have in those guys.
Yeah.
And it's been 3 or 4 years at this point that we've been trying to figure out who those guys are. I'm looking at the pitch count every time Vince Velasquez pitches, every time he throws a pitch. And honestly, I was so encouraged today to see that, like, by the end of the 3rd inning, he had less than 40 pitches, I think. And just to be like, oh, cool, his average pitches per inning is like 10 point something, which is completely normal and not cartoonish in any way. That was really...
He threw 81 pitches in 6 innings today, to your point.
Tremendous. And that's great. For a guy who threw like 150 pitches in 3 innings for the past couple of years, that's really encouraging to see. So I think, yeah, you gotta figure that out eventually. But at the same time, maybe the answer here is that there's just an unreliability in a lot of these young pitching arms that, everyone has their favorite. Everyone wants Nick Pivetta to succeed. Everybody wants to see a Vince Velasquez come through and figure it out. But at the same time, if this team's looking as far into the playoffs as they want to look, as they intend to look, as the offense makes it seem like they want to look, they didn't do a whole lot outside of extending Aaron Nola to improve their rotation this winter. The focus was largely on the lineup. They're going to have to pay attention to this eventually, because even the 2008 Phillies signed Joe Blanton. Like, that's they made a move, bitch, and he wasn't even, I think, on the outset particularly effective for them. He had a couple of stinkers even just that season alone. So, I think eventually you're going to have to address that. To me, this is an issue. Like, if we don't want to talk conclusively about anything this early, but at the same time, this isn't early when you factor in the last couple of years, because it's the same guy.
Right, and it's It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that there would be up and down, because you're right. It is the same guys. This is the same rotation we had last year, and a lot of the thinking about the rotation last year, especially with the young guys, Velasquez and Eflin and Pivetta, was that it was their first time pitching that many innings in a season, so let's see how they do when they bounce back. But Nick Pivetta has looked dreadful so far this season. Not just bad, but dreadful. It looks like a completely different pitcher. I wrote about it for The Good Fight, about the struggles that he and Nola have had so far this year. Some of the pitches he has thrown this season is just his fastball is 3-4 miles an hour slower than it was in spring training, and the changeup that he was throwing in spring training, he's only thrown one changeup, I think, in his three starts so far this year. It's been mystifying, some of the stuff that's gone on with Pivetta, with Velasquez. Like you said, today's outing was encouraging. Can he do it again? Can he have an efficient outing? Where I think the problem is that the only time Velasquez has an efficient outing is when he doesn't give up a hit. He had a no hitter going into the sixth inning today, and that was the thing that really helped him. He gave up a few walks, but he didn't give up any hits, so he was able to kind of move through the lineups relatively quickly with low pitch counts. But if he's got good enough stuff to hold opposing offenses to few hits, then it can work. And it was definitely an encouraging start for Velasquez. And as far as, you know, guys like Arrieta go, he has a little bit more of a track record. But again, he's so dependent on his mechanics and his command that it's always going to be an issue. Which Jake Arrieta are you going to get today? Are you going to get the guy who's just missing 3 inches off the corner the entire game? Or are you going to get the guy who's painting those corners and hitting those spots? And I think Tyler Kepner explained it to me pretty well in episode 276 when we were talking about his book, and he was talking about the Tampa Bay Rays using the opener, which is something I think you and I have talked about. Neither of us are fans of, at least I'm not a fan of the opener, using a bullpen and doing bullpen games unless you have to, unless you're kind of forced into it because of an injury or something like that, or you have to play a 20 inning game and you got to start the next day's pitch the next game starter for 4 innings in the back of a game. If you're planning on doing bullpen games as part of your rotation, I've always hated that, but the Rays don't believe in employing a mediocre starting pitcher just for the sake of eating innings. You know, and that's the thing. The Phillies aren't doing that. The Phillies still believe that all five of their guys, especially the three young guys, have a lot of promise at the back of the rotation. But we're still figuring it out with these guys. And that's still a tricky part here this season with a team that's got an offense that's ready to be in the playoffs. How long can they go with this starting rotation in the back, basically kind of giving you two good starts, one bad start, two bad starts, three good starts, and going all over the place like that before they invest in Madison Bumgarner or something like that?
Right, that's exactly what I was going to say. First of all, that we got our first taste of the new holding everybody accountable Gabe Kapler when he was asked how patient the team could afford to be with Pivetta, and he said, I don't know, you know, the answer is probably pretty patient, but I'm not sure exactly how to answer that question. You know, that tells you that this team, they know that they are in win now mode, and the pitching has not been super conducive to that concept. At the same time, you know, you talk about innings eaters, guess who's leading the league in innings pitched and batters faced right now? It's Madison Bumgarner. So,
oh wow, yeah. Well, that's what he does, and obviously he specializes in postseason pitching as well. But we're still early in the season for that. But it's fair to note the urgency for the Phillies is going to be there, and he's probably the big name that's going to go at the trade deadline. If the Phillies don't get him, someone else will, and just a matter of what you have to get up. I will say one more thing about the starting rotation, and then I want to talk a little bit more about Gabe Kapler. Is that what this team really needs, Justin, is to develop a good starting pitcher. You know, another one. And they developed Aaron Nola, which is great. But they got Nick Pivetta in the trade for Jonathan Papelbon. And Pivetta was never a top prospect in the Nationals organization. He was never on any top 100 list. When he came over to Philadelphia, he was not seen as this guy. He's like, oh, I can't believe they got Nick Pivetta for Jonathan Papelbon. What a steal. It seemed like a pretty fair deal. He was a high upside arm that you were kind of dreaming on a little bit. Same thing with Zach Eflin, who came over in the Jimmy Rollins deal. These two guys are now being counted on to do big things in this starting rotation. What would be really great is for this team to develop Spencer Howard or to develop Adonis Medina, one of these guys to step up and be a middle of the rotation to a near a top of the rotation starting pitcher. Because as we've seen with all of these different pitchers and players signing contract extensions with their current team, there's not going to be a lot of guys in free agency that you're going to want to shell out a ton of money to. So that's the next frontier here for the Phillies, is they need to figure out which of these young guys at the back of the rotation is going to be a part of the future and a part of the present, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Spencer Howard and Adonis Medina are not going to be on the big league team this year, but that's the next phase here, Justin, is trying to figure out which of these young pitchers in the farm system right now is going to be one of those guys that they can count on moving forward. And we don't know that yet. For right now, they're going to be shopping at the trade deadline. And I would imagine making a hard push for Madison Bumgarner, unless Eflin and Pivetta and Velasquez really flash some stuff here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think they could get away with two of those or one of those three guys still not finding his way by midseason. But you do need to see some significant changes in the back of the rotation, unfairly enough, partially because the front of the rotation hasn't been as effective yet either. Then that's made everything just seem worse. We're just going to be repeating ourselves at this point. Because it's just, you know, it's what we've seen before. And that's what makes it part of it so frustrating. But look, the truth of it is this, though. Aaron Nola is going to return to form and be Aaron Nola moving forward. So I'm not as worried about the stopper thing. It's just when it's even like that temporarily, it's a deeply uncomfortable position to be in. Jake Arrieta is perhaps going to be more impactful moving forward. I think that possibility at least still exists. And look, you know, there has to be a reason everybody invested so much, including the Phillies, in Nick Pivetta this year. And I don't even mean financially. I mean, like, they slotted him into the number two spot in the rotation, partially, because the third game of the season was going to be on ESPN, and they wanted Jake Arrieta to absorb the full brunt of that pressure. But at the same time, they also, you know, needed someone to do that number two spot, and they picked Nick Pivetta. I think they saw this as a breakout year for him, too. And everybody so far has been wrong.
Yes, we are.
But I feel like that the answer could still be among the cards the Phillies are holding. But at the same time, it's very easy to see this team acquiring Madison Bumgarner at the trade deadline, because not all five of these guys are going to be have their best stuff by the time the end of July rolls around.
Let's talk about the manager, who I think had a good week. You mentioned some of the things that he had said about Nick Pivetta. He was on MLB Network's radio this week and had some interesting words about Nick Pivetta after his implosion against the Nationals. I'm going to play that and just kind of want to note that I don't think we've heard Gabe Kapler talk about this in public about a player before, but he's doing what the public was looking for him to do last year, speaking honestly and openly about the struggles of one of his players. So give a listen.
I think Nick takes some time to get into the rhythm and the flow of the game. One of the ways I think he can get better, he can take a big step forward, he can meet a higher bar, is to come out and already be hot. Already be in the flow of the game, already have the mental sharpness and the mental focus. It's a lot easier said than done. There have been a lot of pitchers over the course of time who it's taken time to develop. I remember hearing about Tom Glavin, how the way he would be hot, the way he would be focused and locked in the first inning was to throw game-like situations in the pen before he took the mound to start the game. And I think that Nick tends to get better, he tends to get stronger, his stuff tends to get sharper, and what I think will help him meet that higher bar is preparing for the very first pitch of the game with a little bit more determination and diligence.
So Justin, I mean, Kapler right here is saying Pivetta is essentially it's not that he's being lazy about preparation, but that when the first inning comes, he's still trying to get his feet under him. He's still trying to figure out what's going on, and that in order for him to really take the next step, his first inning, his mentality in the first inning has to come in the bullpen when he's getting ready for the game. He's got to be getting ready for the game in the bullpen and basically pitching his bullpen like it's with the mentality that he uses when he goes into the first inning now. So that when he hits the first inning in a game, he's already there, you know? And that seems to be what Kapler's saying. Like, Pivetta's just not ready when the game starts. And that's not good, obviously. But I think more than that, Kapler speaking openly about the struggles of one of his pitchers, you mentioned a second ago, not being honest about not being sure how secure Pivetta's spot is in the rotation. We're seeing a different Gabe Kapler. I think he's taking the advice to heart that he got from Andy McPhail during the offseason, that he got from some of his critics on WIP and you and I and Liz, when we talked about the fact that it's not all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows everywhere when the team's going through a historic 6-week plunge to the middle of the standings when they were in first place last season. Like, that's just not going to fly here. And I think what he also was understanding and what he showed is you don't have to bury a guy. You know what I mean? He didn't bury Nick Pivetta. It was an honest assessment of what he's seeing from Pivetta and the things that he needs to do. That's holding players accountable. That's not throwing anybody. He didn't throw Nick Pivetta under the bus, as far as I could tell. It seemed like an honest reaction from the manager to the media about a player who is clearly not living up to expectations, albeit in a very small sample size so far this year.
Yeah, I feel like the problem people had with Gabe Kapler's positivity last year had more to do with his broad, more general statements about the team during that 6-week plunge. I remember him talking about making that very hard stop on speaking negatively about his players. And I remember not really, it wasn't that I had a problem with him not wanting to trash his players in public. It was just more that at times it felt like he was defying reality. And that was, it did start to feel like insulting to watch the team lose another frustrating, disappointing, stupid game and then have the manager be like, everything's fine. Everything's great. We're feeling good. And that was frustrating. I honestly understand the idea behind not speaking negatively about your players in public, but he took a very hard, hard stance on it to the point that it was just like, okay, like you said, you can speak about the issues a player is facing and just state the truth when they're struggling. It may sound negative, but it's also unarguably true. And no one's going to fight you over stating right now that Nick Pivetta is struggling. Nick Pivetta knows that he's struggling. Does he want to hear his manager talking about it? No, but he probably isn't listening to Gabe Kapler's post-game interviews anyway, because he was at the game and he knows what happened. So I feel like this is healthy for everybody. It's exactly what Gabe Kapler said he was going to be doing this year. You know, Nick Pivetta's not committing a crime that he needs to be held accountable for. He's just not pitching as well as hoped. And this is about as accountable as your managers should be holding his pitcher by saying, like, look, this is what I think he's doing wrong. He's obviously not going to break out his giant scroll and calculator of issues and say, like, oh, you want to know what's wrong with Nick Pivetta? Here, let me break it down for you. If they knew that, then, you know, he probably wouldn't be having the same problems anymore. It is a bit refreshing to see Gabe Kapler come through on his promise of, yeah, look, you know, Andy McPhail sat me down in the offseason. We had our 2-hour dinner or whatever, and we talked about reality versus a positive mindset. And sometimes it feels more positive to just be a little negative just because you're acknowledging reality. And obviously the ideal situation is that Nick Pivetta is performing on the level that everyone wanted to see. But at the same time, we're seeing now, look, Gabe, yeah, clearly there's a way you can do this without taking such a hard stance about not talking negatively about your players. I mean, it's good to see. And at the same time, Gabe Kapler's job, I mean, from the outside looking in, talent wise, is easier this year. Like, we've seen him do what, like 3 different lineups in the first 9 games of the season he did at that point. Like, and by that point last year, he'd had 9 different lineups, I'm pretty sure. So stability with the lineup has really made things simpler. Having better players has made things simpler. There was a headline in the Allentown Morning Call that talked about how the Phillies were on cruise control with Gabe Kapler, which is, you know, kind of scary, but at the same time, yeah, when your team's this good, you don't have to have your hand on the steering wheel at all times because, you know, they're kind of moving in the right direction. Pitching wise, that hasn't been so much the case. And so, yeah, you do need to address the fact, like we are addressing and talking about the Phillies addressing, the fact that this rotation just has not come through in some games, and the same with the bullpen. In some cases, they were directly the reason why the team lost some really winnable games. So, yeah, from a manager's standpoint, this is exactly the way we were told Gabe Kapler was going to evolve, and he's come through thus far. As the team faces more and more challenges down the stretch, and the losses start to mean more, or wins. I'm not saying the team's just going to lose. I'm not expecting a swoon like last year. As the games start to mean more, that tension might rise a little more. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But this is about as much as you, I think, could expect from a Gabe Kapler who said, I'm using this new mentality this year, and people are going to be held accountable.
Yeah, one other button that Kapler pushed on Sunday that worked out was Scott Kingery getting a start. Obviously, Kingery's looked really good at the plate. It's very encouraging to see what Scott Kingery is doing at the plate right now, and he earned himself another start on Sunday, and we had thought that it would probably come at the expense of Cesar Hernandez, but Kapler decided to start Hernandez at second base because he had good numbers against Urania, and darned if Cesar Hernandez didn't hit a solo home run to get the Phillies on the board in the game, and Scott Kingery had three hits in this game, so good job by Kapler to get Kingery some more playing time. And Justin, I think Kingery is probably going to get some more playing time here moving forward, and you wonder now, with Kingery swinging a hot bat, whether we're going to see the super utility guy, whether we're going to see him get into the lineup a little bit more, because now that this team is going to be playing, well, I mean, I think we'd love to see him continue to run out the same eight every day, because those are their eight best players. The Phillies have a long stretch of games now without a day off. They had a bunch of days off in the first week and a half of the season, but I think it was something like 11, what was it now? I'm going to have to look at the schedule while we're talking, but it was like 11, or 13 straight games without a day off over these next couple weeks. So wouldn't surprise me at all to see Kingery not only substituting for Franco and Hernandez a little bit, but also maybe giving McCutchen a day off, or maybe even giving somebody like Harper a day off over the next few weeks. But what have you seen from Kingery over these last few weeks so far?
Yeah, you know, we knew going with the smaller bench that eventually at some point Scott Kingery was going to pop into the picture here. And going from last year and having to get through what he went through, what we all went through, really, as far as Scott Kingery goes, it was just interesting kind of trying to figure out what we had in him as well, because he obviously was sort of hyped up a bit. Matt Klentak was like, oh, he forced our hand in spring training and he got that extension, and then nothing really came to be, I think, as far as the actual regular season went for Kingery. But this year, you know, he made some adjustments, but also just having another year in baseball, or having a year in baseball under his belt, I think helps him a lot. He talked in spring training about how it just felt so much more comfortable, and how even just like through 1 year, he's not as like tense or nervous just being there. And I mean, anybody who's started a new job can tell you, even if everything's like everyone's friendly and everything's out, like laid out for you, just being in that new situation, there's going to be pressure applied to you that makes your job more difficult in every way. So I think just having that experience has helped him a lot, and the pressure is off of him. Like we've seen Michael Franco thrive in his new spot. He's obviously starting a whole hell of a lot more than Scott Kingery, but he's also got pressure off of him because he's not being expected to carry the team. And Scott Kingery is benefiting from the same ripple effect, I would say, that he didn't get a ton of playing time to start the season. I think you're right. I think we're going to see more Kingery moving forward as guys get time off, because he is the guy who is the backup for most of the infield. And you know, if they have a couple of outfielders on the bench already, and Nick Williams and Aaron Altherr and Roman Quinn might be back at some point, so I don't know if we're going to see Kingery playing a whole lot of outfield moving forward, but at the same time, we still will see plenty of Scott Kingery, I think, and he's handled it really well so far, and it's encouraging to see that, especially at a point where we don't necessarily need to see an incredibly effective Scott Kingery now. But he is somebody who could play a crucial role moving forward. If he gives Gabe Kapler another tool in his toolbox and he wants to start fiddling and tinkering, maybe not as dramatically as he did last year. Let me rephrase. Definitely not as dramatically as last year, but right. If some capacity of that wanted to resurface and he wanted to start getting Scott Kingery in there, maybe at a different position a couple of nights a week, and Scott Kingery responded by actually being an effective hitter and defender, then okay, you know, that's, we can talk. Obviously, I would love to see Scott Kingery more at second base. I would love to see him more at his natural position than playing the positions that proved to be difficult for him defensively last year. At the same time, I think that if he's got an effective piece that he can slot in there and play with matchups, then the difference would be this year that he's doing it with players who are good and players who can respond to that. And Scott Kingery can theoretically play multiple infield positions. But if he's putting up better numbers, then we're not just like moving the same crap around and hoping things will be different. We're actually strategically placing guys in there, with the idea that, that, you know, this team has Bryce Harper on it and Andrew McCutchen on it and Rhys Hoskins on it, like guys who are actually hitting the ball and doing well. Last year, it felt like every move. I mean, what was the Phillies' records through their first 9 games last year? I know they started off kind of hot. I'm actually gonna bother to look this up. But at some at certain points, and I think this is undeniably true, that they seem to be making moves just to make moves. You know what I mean? Like, you just, yeah, because you, yeah, have, yeah, the parts doesn't mean you have to use them. And you know, right, what? They were 4-5 through their first 9 games to start last year. So it wasn't even necessarily effective that they managed to use 9 different lineups in those games. So yeah, I think that's my overall point, that you want to be able to use assets because they're going to be more effective, not just because they're there. And that's I know Gabe Kapler would fight that idea, that he always, when he makes a decision, it's because of a reason. Well, it's because of multiple reasons, and he'll gladly explain those reasons to you. But those reasons didn't pay off last year. This year, I think there's a better chance that you're going to see those reasons pay off. And if Scott Kingery is a part of that, and Gabe Kapler's toolbox gets a little bigger, then yeah, I'm confident to see him fiddle a little bit. But again, I balk at saying that so much. I just want to see, I think they're doing the right thing now and just putting the same lineup out there and being like, all right, are these guys, is this lineup as productive as we wanted it to be? Is it going to stay productive? And it seems like, yeah, you've arranged the Jenga tower and you're just standing back and it's not falling. And it's like, all right, great. Now we know this team has a good lineup. Let's see what we'll have to do when inevitably a backup guy has to be slotted in there. You know, let's see what we have. Yeah. And it's good to see that Scott Kingery can fill that role when asked.
Up next, we'll wrap up with a series preview of the Mets coming up here. And by the way, 17 games in a row, Justin, the Phillies are in the midst of playing without a day off. So there's going to be some substitutions. You're going to see some different lineups here over the next couple weeks, just because guys will drop dead if they don't. So 17 games in a row after all those off days. No way to even those out, Major League Baseball, during the course of the beginning of the season. The first month, there's no way to maybe look fewer off days or whatever. We'll get that up next, this series preview against the Mets coming up here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So Justin, we'll wrap things up as we look ahead to this week series against the New York Mets. The Phillies traveling to New York for their first 3 games against the Mets this season. We all remember what a generally unpleasant experience it was taking on the Mets last year. The Mets really just have owned the Phillies since 2011. The Phillies have actually not had a winning record against the Mets since 2011. Let me read that again. The Phillies have not had a winning record against the Mets since 2011, the last time they won the National League East, the year they won 102 games. So the Phillies owe this team a little bit here. And now both teams are good. They're tied atop the National League East. The Phillies are going to see Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matz, and Zach Wheeler in this 3-game series. They catch a little bit of a break, Justin, in that they're not going to have to face Jacob deGrom, but there's not a lot of easy answers with Syndergaard, Matz, and Wheeler, and the Phillies will counter with Nola, Pivetta, and Arrieta. Games in New York, do you expect this team to win this series, lose this series? I mean, it's given the history against the Mets, I have a hard time seeing the Phillies win this series this week.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think I want to say I do want to say that I think they'll they'll win it, but I can't, I gotta say, I think my instincts are telling me that's just wrong. Even missing DeGrom, obviously the Mets have the best pitching staff in the NL East, so you're not really missing anyone when you face them for a three-game series. You're going to run into at least two guys you just would rather not see. And I'll tell you what, the Phillies have never had to play Pete Alonso before. I picked him to be the National League Rookie of the Year this year. Oh my gosh, that dude's a monster. Do you have any idea what he's doing to left-handed pitching? He's hitting .467 against left-handed pitching right now. And it's not even like that's a particularly small sample size, even this early in the season. Wilson Ramos and Michael Conforto are also crushing it. There's a couple of guys who are mid. There's like two other guys who are like mid-range in their lineup, but the rest of the lineup is not hitting very well. That being said, yeah, they're still 9-5, same as the Phillies. So they've been doing a lot right. But yeah, Pete Alonso, I think when we were talking about Philly killers earlier, yeah, Jeff McNeil maybe is the Philly killer of the future. But I'm telling you, I think Alonso is about to be a pain in the ass for a long time to come. Yeah, he's hitting .360 thus far this season. And like I said, he's absolutely destroying left-handed pitching. And he's got a .750 batting average when he swings at the first pitch.
Don't throw a strike. Use the analytics, Phillies. Don't throw the man a strike. This is one of those rare times it's good the Phillies don't have any left-handers in their rotation.
Seriously, that's why I'm like, I'm scared of that. And then I'm like, oh, right, yeah, the Phillies don't bother to stock themselves with left-handers. So, all right, we win that one.
The nightmare, of course, is Jose Alvarez versus, Alvarez had a nice inning, but Jose Alvarez versus Pete Alonso would obviously be the nightmare scenario late in that tie game.
Runners in scoring position, as a situation in which Pete Alonso is slugging 1333.
Oh my gosh. All right. So just maybe we pitch around Pete Alonso this week, guys. Obviously, the analytics department will be whispering in the ears of Phillies pitchers, let's try not to give this guy any first pitch cookies right down the middle. But it should be a good series. These are two good teams. Really, every series against these National League East teams, even the Marlins, it seems like, is going to be a pretty good series. But obviously, with the Mets and the Braves and the Nationals, all four of those teams, at least so far, do appear to be on pretty even footing. And so, obviously, lots more season to go here. But Justin, as we finish up episode 277, any final thoughts for the listeners?
No, I mean, we're working on some new dirty innings, that sort of factor into the 2009 season that Liz and I are covering on Continued Success. And, we just did a Harry Callis episode. Of course, he passed away around this time last year around this time 10 years ago that we did a really, I think we did a really good
job
to Harry Callis.
Yeah.
And, it's a really interesting season because, you wind up just maybe not forgetting entirely, but a lot of the stuff that happened that year kind of slips your mind because the 2008 stuff resonates so much. But 2009, they went back to the World Series, but I think it gets a little overshadowed because it wasn't the year they won the World Series and it wasn't the year they had the stellar rotation. It was the first time through with Cliff Lee, but he didn't join up till halfway through the season. So it's been really interesting. And I think anybody listening to this podcast would probably enjoy that one.
You got to be subscribing to the Good Fight podcast feed in order to get it, gang. So make sure you go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. And while you're there, leave a 5-star rating and a review, if you wouldn't mind, while you're there. And make sure to check out The Dirty Inning, too, when you subscribe, if you don't already. And check out that outstanding podcast. You guys did a hell of a job with that 1915 episode that came out last week. So make sure you give that a listen. Always hysterical, always informative. Great podcasts here at The Good Fight. And, that'll do it for episode number 277 of Hittin' Season. Also want to remind you to check out our Patreon for Hittin' Season. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Lots of bonus material up there as well. Different shorter podcasts, some written content, video series. I said series, so yeah, I'm going to leave that in. That's what we've got for you at the Hittin' Season Patreon. Again, go to patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.